I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, more chaos in Seattle leading up to what's expected to be massive protests across the country over the weekend. Plus, the evolution of a lie. We will take you through in real time how a local news station lied about a police attack on peaceful protesters. Plus, a local teacher loses his job for reading the N-word out loud while he was reading To Kill a Mockingbird to his class. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. 18 away, everyone. We are 18 paid subscribers away from reaching our goal of adding 300 paid subscribers in 30 days. And there's just one day left. Our 30% off promo ends at 6 a.m. tomorrow, Friday. So if you want to be one of our final 18, help us reach our goal, go to patreon.com/undivided, patreon.com/undivided. Use the promo code 300, that's the number 300, and you'll get 30% off your first year of Undivided. You'll also get a warm, fuzzy feeling inside for helping support our independent work. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here for our final live show of the week. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Holy smokes, we have a lot to fit in on the show today. Somebody just dropped in the chat that it's Friday the 13th tomorrow. I don't like that. I don't like unlucky stuff. So hopefully what happened last night is not a sign of things to come on Friday the 13th. That worries me quite a bit. So, of course, there's massive protests planned for across the country. We've been talking about protests and rioting all week. We have a lot to discuss on that end. What happened in Seattle, some absolute utter nonsense that happened in Spokane. And we want to we're going to move up Florida Report on the show this week to the top of the show, because we're going to compare and contrast the so-called leaders in a place like Washington and California and their messaging that's just encouraging rioters with what real leadership looks like in a state like Florida, where they basically are telling you, if you assault our police officers, we're going to kill you stone cold dead. So it's an interesting juxtaposition. But first, let's start with chaos in Seattle. Even though I said I was too old for this, you know what? Yesterday, went out again last night. I wasn't going to. And then I heard from our friend Jonathan Cho that there was like 1,000 Antifa types who were marching from Cal Anderson Park down to the federal building, which was, of course, the site of chaos, vandalism, confrontations between federal agents and anti-ICE individuals earlier on this week. And so it has continued to be this site of chaos. And last night got pretty bad. I got there down to the federal building. And from my vantage point, the very first thing I saw when I was walking up was this. Dumpster on fire in the middle of the street, about 1,000 mostly black clad rioters there. They were throwing massive fireworks into the center of it, which if you weren't watching what was happening and you were just in the area downtown, you would have thought were explosions. Well, it is explosion, but a bomb of some kind. It was crazy. So that went on for about 30 minutes. Really no police in sight. There were a couple SPD cars that were blocking traffic along that street in front of the federal building a little ways down. But eventually, the Seattle Police Department, within an hour for sure, came in hot and heavy.
Oh my God. Wow.
What you didn't see right before that video started is the police had formed a line up the street, and these rioters were so emboldened, they marched right up to the police, and someone took one of those massive fireworks and they threw it in the middle of the police line. I can't imagine that there were police officers who weren't injured as a result of that. But I thought one of the things SPD did pretty effectively is first of all, their very first mission was to clear that street so they could put that fire out in the middle of it. But then they used their bicycle officers to split the crowd apart and to send the crowd in 3 or 4 different directions. And so when that happens, you see the crowd start to thin out. You know, they'll try to regather. They tried a little bit at the federal building, but within about 2 hours, I would say the Seattle Police Department had the overall riot under control. But the destruction left behind was pretty severe at the federal building. And there were still people after police had dispersed the crowd. I mean, I captured a guy spray painting the federal building. No one around to stop him. Complete lawlessness. I mean, all measure of things. Sorry for the penis drawing that you just saw. That was, I mean, they're very mature people, obviously. So look, you know, things are definitely escalating. I will say that. I don't know what to expect for Saturday. There's this No Kings March that's going to happen in Seattle, a bunch of other cities in Washington state and across the country. I think they said this is like, there's like 1900, so almost 2000 of these No Kings protests that are going to happen across the country. I think you're going to see a lot of sort of older progressives who have no intention of being violent, who are going to march in the streets. But then, as always, particularly in West Coast cities where our leadership is zero, you have these Antifa types who they're bent on violence and chaos, and they are going to take to the streets. They're going to use that crowd as cover, and then they're going to stay late into the night and do probably some version of what we saw on the streets last night. A lot of credit to the men and women of the Seattle Police Department, who, despite weak leadership, as we discussed on the show yesterday, are out there doing their jobs and putting their lives on the line to try to protect citizens and property. So that's what happened in Seattle last night. Won't give Antifa more attention than we need to be able to tell the story. So I want to talk about a tweet that got a lot of attention yesterday, continues to get a lot of attention today, because I think for reasonable people, it struck them off the bat as a lie. And the reason I want to go through this is you see the tweet, you look at it, your brain tells you, well, that can't be true. But rarely do we ever go back and actually show you the real-time genesis of the lie and how the media so boldly and brazenly lies about left-wing political violence and downplays it and vilifies the police. And so on this show, I want to take you through everything. I think it'll be a really interesting exercise in media bias. So here's the offending tweet. It was sent out by Crem2 News, which is a TV news station in Spokane. So it says, the Spokane, this is 8:18 p.m. last night, okay? The Spokane Police Department has deployed gas on a group of peaceful protesters outside the Spokane ICE office. Several people have been arrested. So again, the Spokane Police Department has deployed gas on a group of peaceful protesters. So there's a video that accompanies it, and it shows police launching something. I'm not sure what their characterization, if it's accurate or not, but on this group of individuals who are in the street, and it's a pretty tense moment. So as soon as I saw that, I thought, well, that's bullshit. That's bullshit. And this tweet was, they were pretty well eviscerated for it. So I thought, well, let me go back and look at the timeline. So let me set up what happened in Spokane in the 6 hours leading up to Crem2 News sending out this tweet that Spokane police were attacking peaceful protesters. So there's a guy named Ben Stuckert in Spokane. He's a former Spokane City Council member. And he had sent out an action alert. He is the one who got all these people outside the Spokane ICE detention facility, calling on them to protest ICE. Here's what he said. Action alert. 3 weeks ago, I became the legal guardian to a young man from Venezuela seeking asylum. He has turned in all paperwork and has a future court hearing. I went with him to ICE to check in today. They detained him and are shipping him to Tacoma, where the ICE detention center is. I'm asking that if you care at all about these illegal detainers, you meet me at 411 West Catalado by 2 p.m. I'm going to sit in front of the bus. Feel free to join me. The Latino community needs the rest of our community now, not tonight, not Saturday, but right now. So Ben, I guess he became the legal guardian of this kid from Venezuela, finds out he's going to be moved, transported by bus from the Spokane ICE facility to the ICE detention center in Tacoma. So he makes a plan that he's going to sit in front of the transport bus, and he tells other people, again, a former Spokane City Council member, to come and join him as well. So I'm going to take you through the real-time coverage from Crem2 News as all of this is unfolding. Now, I will say from the jump, I don't know who's responsible for the offending tweet. I'm going to show you tweets from another reporter from Crem2 News who was on the ground, who clearly seems to be fairly documenting and just stating with video, here's what's happening, here's the response, here's what's happening, here's the response. So I don't know that it's this reporter's fault. I'm not sure she's the one who sent out the offending tweet, but I'm going to use her reporting from Crem2 News to show why and how insane it is that Krem at 8:18 p.m. makes the assertion that police are gassing peaceful demonstrators. So here is Amanda Rowley's tweet with video at 2:56 p.m. It says, a car is parked in front of the bus that will supposedly take the young man and his friend, both from Venezuela, to Tacoma for a hearing. Stuckert is asking for another car to park behind the bus. So you see it there. Very clear. They've got a car. They're blocking this bus that's supposed to take the ICE detainees to Tacoma. That was 2:56 p.m. Somewhere around 3:02 p.m., Amanda Rowley with Krem News sends out this picture. The driver's side of the bus outside of the Spokane ICE office is spray painted white. So at that point, they're blocking an ICE bus. 3 p.m., someone in the group has vandalized the bus so it can't be driven, because clearly you're not going to be able to see out the front window. 3:02 p.m. All right, here's what Amanda Rowley, the video she sent out at 5:30 p.m. She writes, it has escalated. Officers have come to the side gate to the Spokane ICE office, and this is what unfolded. And what her video shows are individuals storming the gate. You see, you barely see their heads, but the reporter is saying on there, oh my God, they're trying to go inside. There's pushing and shoving at the ice gate. So there's clearly assaults that are happening, and the crowd is becoming very hostile. And even the Krem reporter characterizes it as being an escalation from the crowd. So that's 5:30 p.m. 6:41 p.m., she sends out two pictures. Protesters have gathered outside both gates located on the backside of the Spokane ICE office. They've blocked them both. So we see a very similar thing to what we saw at the federal building in Seattle. Both of the gates, they're trying to block with scooters, garbage cans, whatever they can. So again, just to sort of recap here, they're blocking an ICE bus. They vandalized the ICE bus. They've gotten in a pushing and shoving match and stormed the gate of an ICE facility. And as of 6:41 p.m., they've attempted to block with makeshift barricades both of the gates at that ICE facility. 7:44 p.m., this video comes out from the official Krem 2 news account. It says, protesters are confronting Spokane police and the Spokane County Sheriff's Office as the gathering outside the Spokane ICE office grows. Former Spokane City Councilmember Ben Stuckert, who called on the community to be gathered, has been arrested. So they're saying that there's confrontations. You see, Nicole, can you do it one more time, actually, because I want people to look closely. These confrontations are happening in the middle of the road, and there's actually people you see the benches. They've tried to block police cars with these bikes and with these benches. And Krem 2 News is saying at 7:44 p.m. from their official X account that there have been arrests, that things have escalated. You can see in their video that people have taken to the streets. They're blocking cop cars with benches and with bikes. So we know that arrests have occurred as of 7:44 p.m. We also know between that and the next video I'm going to show you, that the Spokane Police Department has made a lawful dispersal order. So this has been going on now since at least 2 p.m. It's almost 8 p.m., 6 hours. We know there's been vandalism. We know there's been what looked a lot like assaults when they tried to rush the gate of the ICE facility. There's been blockades put up. In that 6 hour time frame, there's been arrests that have been made, and Spokane Police issue a dispersal order. All of that happens, documented by Krem 2 News, put out in sequence by their reporter who's on the ground, Amanda Rowley, and then Krem 2 News puts out the offending tweet and the corresponding video. 8:18 p.m. The Spokane Police Department has deployed gas on a group of peaceful protesters. Peaceful protesters. Doing nothing wrong, and Spokane police have gassed them. How nuts is that? You're not going to see that anywhere but on Undivided. But that shows you the evolution of a lie. They could even have, from their own account, from the very same account they post the lie about peaceful protesters being gassed by Spokane PD. What? 29 minutes before that? They're saying and they're showing video of confrontations and arrests are being made, And in all the hours leading up to that, they're showing, they're documenting, blocking a bus, vandalizing a bus, vandalizing the ICE facility, storming the gates of the ICE facility, taking to the streets, blockading police cars. Their own reporter has documented it all and put it out there. And then at 8:18 p.m., they're saying these poor peaceful protesters are being gassed by the Spokane Police Department. That's why you can't trust the legacy media. That's a perfect example of how the legacy media lies when it's left-wing political violence and when they want to spin a narrative that makes the police department look bad. And in total, more than 30 arrests. Were those peaceful people too, Krem? Did the city of Spokane just come in and arrest 30 people for just being peaceful, whose only crime apparently was being gassed by the evil police department? So that shows you, if you have a local news station that for whatever reason you blindly trust and you see a post from them that says police are gassing peaceful protesters, the first thing you should do is go back and look at what that police or what that news station has been reporting for the hours leading up to that moment. Or if you can find any videos or photos of what other people have been actually showing on the ground. Because after 6 hours of crimes being committed, those are no longer peaceful protesters. And there's going to be a lot of this used over the weekend at these No Kings rallies and marches, which I do believe will start overwhelmingly peacefully. I have no doubt in my mind, we're kind of used to this. We know the anti-Trump crowd, and they're sort of older and progressives. I am sure that the vast majority of people who take to the streets on Saturday will do so with the intent of being completely peaceful. But when it becomes a situation when there are acts of violence and vandalism, you will see the people who don't want to be engaged in rioting leave. And the people who don't leave know what they're getting into. They know what they're staying for. They're no longer peacefully assembled. And I saw that last night when the group of 1,000 Antifa marched from Cal Anderson Park down to the federal building. There are some who got to the federal building, engaged in some chants, and got the heck out of there because they knew exactly what was planned. Because they could see the Antifa people with their gas masks going on, and they didn't want a part in it. And to those people, bravo. You peacefully assembled, you got your point out there, and then you left. And within 20 minutes of them arriving at the federal building, the crowd of 1,000 was down to maybe 500. And then when the fire started and they started throwing fireworks into the dumpster, crowd was down to like 300. And at that point, you know that those 300 are there to commit crimes and they're there to riot. And every single one of them should be arrested. So don't let and don't trust the media when they couch, if there's overwhelmingly peaceful, they say mostly peaceful. After the sun sets and the violence and the vandalism begins, those aren't peaceful demonstrators anymore. So don't believe media outlets that tell you that. Insane stuff from Krem 2 News. And the last I checked, despite them being eviscerated for this online, that post is still up and no apology or correction has been made. All right, we want to compare all of that to what's happening in the state of Florida ahead of the protests planned for this weekend. Because the leadership in Florida could not be more different than the leadership in Washington State. So we'll get to that in our segment, Florida Report, coming up next. First, let's talk about your retirement. You probably have dreams for your retirement, plans. Maybe you're going to RV across the country. Maybe you're going to move to a state like Florida where things are more sane and you've already figured out how much you need to be making a month, what you need to have right now in your 401k and your investments. But the question is all of that properly protected against risk? Is your retirement dream properly protected against risk? Last thing I want for any of you or for myself is to have this work so hard our whole lives and then we can't experience the retirement that we want to experience. So, you know, we get second opinions on all sorts of things. Get a second opinion on your retirement portfolio with our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. He'll take a look at it. He'll give you his honest thoughts on it. Maybe he thinks that it's great. I mean, you know, if you haven't seen these massive swings as the stock market has been reacting to the Trump tariffs, there's a good chance that your allocations are pretty good and that you are properly protected against risk. But if you've been freaking out and it's been going wild in one direction or the other, I would reach out to Zach and ask him just to take a look at it for you. Totally free. Schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right. So just a quick reminder of our weak leadership in the state of Washington. There was a joint statement put out by Seattle area leaders yesterday. So like Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell, the King County Executive, Governor Bob Ferguson, the mayor of Tacoma. And here's what they said ahead of, you know, what's been happening and what is expected to happen over the weekend. The right to protest is core to our nation. It is critical that Washingtonians do so peacefully. Violence will not be tolerated. Those who break the law can expect to be held accountable. At the same time, we expect that local law enforcement will manage all protests with professionalism and without interference from the federal government. And of course, Bob Ferguson has been going full-blown TDS all week, you know, about, oh, Trump better not interfere here. And then, of course, the new Seattle police chief, when talking about how he's going to manage protests and riots, also went full-blown TDS this week.
I will do everything in my power, I want to be clear, to protect anyone in Seattle from anyone who comes to this city with the intention to hurt them or inhibit their First Amendment rights. And what that means is, at some point, I will probably go to jail and be in prison.
Can't even listen
because
to this
we have an administration that has threatened to jail politicians.
Yeah, so he's, oh, I'm going to protect our community from Donald Trump. And I'll probably go to jail for doing it, as if Donald Trump even knows who you are. But it's just this weakness that, again, as I've said, it encourages and excuses the behavior of rioters, because they look at that and they see the police chief is on our side against Trump. The attorney general, Nick Brown, is on our side against Trump. He says Trump's a fascist. So we're emboldened now to riot in the name of hating Orange Man Bad. And we wonder why the protest gets out of control here is because they have leadership, quote unquote, leadership in Washington state and along the whole West Coast is on their side. They're focused more on hating Donald Trump than they are at condemning violent political extremism. That is not the case in the state of Florida. As you know, we do Florida Report on the show every week because there is such a difference between politics in a place like Washington and in a place like Florida. And on this issue, heading into this weekend, where there are even no King's Marches planned in Florida, the messaging from leaders, particularly leaders in law enforcement, could not be more different.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
We had to move up Florida Report in the show today because this stuff is just too good. So we just played what cowardly police leadership looks like in the city of Seattle. And it's no wonder we have these massive riots, because essentially these people believe that they have, and they do have, the support of leadership in the city to do it. Now let's see what a real law enforcement leader sounds like. Here's gearing up for potential protests slash riots, maybe, I don't know, over the weekend in Florida. Brevard County Sheriff Wayne Ivey. He ain't messing around.
If you let it turn violent, whoo, you do not want to do that in Brevard County. I'm going to tell you that, and I believe I can speak for my fellow sheriffs around the rest of the state. You don't want to let it happen. And just so there's no confusion, because I don't want to hear any whining later saying we didn't know. If you resist lawful orders, you're going to jail.
Okay.
Let me be very clear about that.
Fair.
If you block an intersection or a roadway in Brevard County, you are going to jail. If you flee arrest, you're going to go to jail tired, because we are going to run you down and put you in jail. If you try to mob rule a car in Brevard County, gathering around it, refusing to let the driver leave, in our county, you're most likely going to get run over and dragged across the street. If you spit on us, you're going to the hospital and in jail. If you hit one of us, you're going to the hospital and jail, and most likely get bitten by one of our big, beautiful dogs that we have here. If you throw a brick, a firebomb, or point a gun at one of our deputies, we will be notifying your family where to collect your remains at, because we will kill you graveyard dead. We're not going to play. This has got to stop. You're watching what's taking place out there. You're seeing police officers that are being attacked, being spit on, being put in harm's way just for doing their jobs. You're seeing ICE agents that are being targeted for doing their jobs. And you're seeing obstructionists that are doing all of this standing in the way of law and order. Not here, not in the state of Florida.
Graveyard dead. We're going to kill you, graveyard dead. Yeah, you know, I would probably think twice about rioting in Florida after hearing that.
Yeah, I mean, I love how clear and concise they are about things down here, because it does eliminate any excuse of confusion for people on the other end. You know, it's, you know, I've participated in protests, and you can see when things are starting to go a way you don't want to be around. And it's just, if you're the type of person who wants to peacefully protest, you need to know when to leave.
Yeah.
So that you don't get caught up in that. And I think that having law enforcement agencies that, and sheriffs and leadership that make it very clear when it goes from peaceful to non-peaceful, it gives everybody, the good, the bad, and the ugly, time to make a decision.
Yeah,
before it even happens.
You do this, this is the result. You do this, this is the result. You do this, we're going to kill you, graveyard dead. That's like the second Florida sheriff I've heard use that phrase, graveyard dead. Is that a phrase? Southern. I don't know. I only hear it from Florida sheriffs.
It's got to be a Southern thing. I mean, they always have some like funny little, like, I want to say dad joke ways of saying things, but yeah. It's got to be just a Southern thing.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of the whole, he mentioned what happens if you surround someone's car, you're probably going to get run over, right, in Florida. Yeah. This happens all the time. And this is this point of contention. You see it at the riots in California. They block cars and then they get mad when people drive through their crowd, like, how dare you? Or they're like screaming, oh my God, you ran that person over. Well, you were in the street, you know? I mean, what did you expect? So it's fascinating to watch their results. Like, they think that they should be able to surround a car and that car just has to sit there while they bash in the windows and you've got kids in the car and all this stuff. So Governor Ron DeSantis made it very, very clear that if you're a citizen and you're driving and someone blocks your path, you have every right in the world to take them out. Here's the clip from Governor DeSantis.
We also have a policy that if you're driving on one of those streets and a mob comes and surrounds your vehicle and threatens you, you have a right to flee for your safety. And so if you drive off and you hit one of these people, that's their fault for impinging on you. You don't have to sit there and just be a sitting duck and let the mob grab you out of your car and drag you through the streets. You have a right to defend yourself in Florida.
Yep, you have a right to defend yourself. So that, again, that's the governor saying, hey, if this happens to you, do that. But it also sends a message to the would-be rioters that the governor has given people permission to run you over if you block their car.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope that this doesn't go as an invitation to do so. Like, if you don't plan to be in the area, don't go to the area just to take advantage of these new, you know, leniencies that the governor is giving you permission to run people over. Like, if you are not part of the protest, just stay out of the area. Don't put yourself in a position to get stuck in the traffic or be in that position to get mobbed, you know. But at the end of the day, you have to have a permit to take over the streets in the state of Florida. And if you don't have a permit, like, you got to keep the protest to the sidewalks. And if you don't do that, this is going to be a result.
Well, and yeah, like you said, there's some gray area there. I mean, they like to block freeways and stuff. And no one is saying, like, keep going 80 miles an hour and run into a crowd that's formed a line on a freeway. But often what we see is the surrounding, harassing. There's people with kids in the car and they're like, please let us go. And they won't let them go. I've been surrounded before. Immediately, it's a very threatening feeling. You feel like your life is in danger and you should be able to defend yourself appropriately. So I love it. And you are going to be our on the ground Florida correspondent this weekend for the No Kings protest in Miami. What are you expecting?
Yeah. I'm expecting a peaceful protest. Okay. I mean,
yeah. After
Miami.
That, yeah. After that warning. Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Even during the Black Lives Matters protest, which I actually participated in some of those back in 2020, they were mainly very, very peaceful. There was one incident of looting that turned out to be like jewelry thieves that were hiding under the guise of a protest that looted a jewelry store. Yeah. But like down here, I think in Tampa, you might see a little bit more contentious activity. Tampa's a little more liberal, but I'm more curious to see the anti-protesters, the people there protesting the protesters, because we have a lot of Cubans in Miami that love Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And this is a majorly anti-Donald Trump movement this weekend. So I'm kind of curious to see how many people are going to show up in support of Donald Trump, you know, on different sides of the aisle. I think that'll be interesting here, just seeing like literally the yin and the yang and the different sides of things. I think I'm looking forward to the most.
Yeah, it will be. You'll have a lot more of that than there will be here. There's not going to be a lot of Trump supporters coming out in counter protest in Washington state, certainly not in Seattle, because there just aren't very many in Seattle. But also, I think they'd rather just let the geriatric scream into the ether about how Donald Trump thinks he's a king. Anyway, Miranda, we appreciate it. Florida is just looking better by the day.
Always better. It's 80 and sunny here.
Yeah, okay.
And no nonsense.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Yeah, that guy was crazy. That sheriff is amazing. Can you imagine? It's about messaging. It's always been about messaging. You can't always prevent, you know, people who are hell-bent on rioting. But I'll tell you what, if you have the chief law enforcer in your county or your city or your state coming out and saying, like, we will, here, if you do this, we'll do this. If you do this, you're going to jail. If you do this, you're going to the hospital. If you do this, you're going to be dead. And we're going to tell your family where to get your body at the morgue. I don't know. As a rioter, especially since a lot of them are like 20-somethings or even teenagers, that might make me think twice about going out. So there is an element of, you know, putting them on notice that I think can help prevent some of these things from happening. We had to play those for you. It's just so starkly different from the political cowardice that we're seeing in places like California and Washington State. All right, coming up next, a story from our friend Jonathan Cho at Turning Point USA. He's also reports for Discovery Institute. He went out and met a Spokane teacher who has lost his job because he was reading To Kill a Mockingbird to his class. And you might know that that contains the N-word, and he read the N-word as part of reading the book. So now he's been canceled in the truest sense and lost his job. So we'll play that report from Jonathan coming up. It's an interesting, I think, conversation to be had. First, I just saw people in chat saying, that's it, I'm moving to Florida, make room, Miranda. If that's you, well, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. We don't want you to leave. We need sane people to stay here, but I don't blame you. In fact, I just was talking to Mike. I was like, maybe we should get a vacation place in retirement down in Florida so we can escape to sanity when we need to. Reach out to our friend Wes Jones if you're going to sell your home, even if you're not leaving Washington State. Wes and his team have an innovative marketing strategy. Their listings absolutely stand out. They look fantastic, and that's part of getting feet in the door and offers on the table. Wes and his team also specialize in coming in and helping you make cosmetic upgrades to your home that are going to benefit you when it comes to the selling price. So the first thing I would do, go to sellwithwes.com, use their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. And then ask Wes for a free market analysis. You can kind of set your expectations about how homes are performing in your area. Sellwithwes.com. It is simply a better way to sell your home. All right. So as you know, To Kill a Mockingbird has been one of those books that people want to cancel. I thought the left like hated canceling books, but you can cancel a teacher if they read a book that has bad words in it. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, Harper Lee's classic novel, To Kill a Mockingbird, has always been the subject of controversy for some of its themes of racism, justice, the complexities of human nature, as Scout and her brother Jem grapple with the trial of a black man falsely accused of rape. The mockingbird in the title is symbolic, representing innocence and the destruction of good. It is a coming-of-age story set in 1930s Alabama, told through the eyes of Scout Finch. Anyway, perfectly appropriate for high schoolers, I think. I don't have a problem with To Kill a Mockingbird being read. One of the issues is, of course, that it has some words in it that you might have to talk to students about, like the N-word. Well, in Spokane High School, in Matthew Mastronardi's high school class in the city of Spokane, he read To Kill a Mockingbird to his class, and he chose to read it in the way it was written, and now he's in trouble for it. Our friend Jonathan Cho went out to meet him and to tell the story.
While students at West Valley High School prepare for summer vacation,
found the spot.
Matthew Mastronardi is fighting to keep his teaching job.
I read a couple passages.
All because he took a risk and read out loud a passage from the American literary classic, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Don't you believe a word he says, Dale.
Not just any passage, but the one featuring the N-word, which is used in the book dozens of times.
Talking about the word
The N-word.
The N-word.
The third-year Spanish teacher says he was trying to make a point to his students about the importance of academic freedom after another teacher instructed students to skip over that controversial word.
I think that's unfortunate because you miss out on engaging with the text in an honest way.
Problem for Mastronardi.
I said Calpurnia says that's
His performance was caught on a student's camera and has now gone viral.
No, I did not. I had no idea.
It's unclear if anyone even made a complaint, but his bosses decided it was a violation of the teacher's code of conduct and chose not to renew his contract.
It's a stretch of the interpretation saying I engaged with students in inappropriate behavior.
Mastronardi says he was shocked by the punitive decision, since there are no official rules instructing teachers to censor readings of American classics at West Valley.
Nice to meet you.
We caught up with Superintendent Kyle Rydell and asked for an explanation.
You guys aren't going to renew Matthew Mastronardi's contract.
I'm not aware of that, sir. Like I said, it's a personnel matter. It goes through HR.
However, word is now getting out into the Spokane, Washington community.
It's a good book to read, but I don't think that teachers should be saying it.
And while some think Mastronardi used poor judgment,
and also he's white, he shouldn't have said it.
There's now a change.org petition with hundreds of signatures asking the district to bring him back.
Because he's a really good teacher.
It was started by freshman Peyton Johnson.
He was just reading like out of the book. He wasn't saying it to anyone or like in a rude manner.
Meanwhile, the city's black community is also starting to chime in.
We need to educate our kids more.
Michael Brown runs a job training program for high school kids and says the N-word remains deeply offensive to African Americans.
Once again, it goes back to ignorance, which means a lack of knowledge.
In this case, he says the district made the wrong call.
And we got to quit shying away from that or being so sensitive.
Do you want to tell us what really happened?
Mastronardi is an Air Force veteran, also the school's assistant wrestling coach, and a father of three.
Four, 2, and 6 months old. And
he's now appealing to the school board at the end of the month.
Do you still stand by your decision to read the N-word out loud from this book?
My conscience is clean, and if I could rewind to that exact moment, I would not do anything differently.
Hoping this ends up turning into a teachable moment.
That's Jonathan Cho for Frontlines, powered by Turning Point USA. Good report, great report, and that's ridiculous. I mean, so you might have noticed there's not a subscriber poll before the show. So after the show, we're going to put out a poll about this. Do you believe this teacher should have been disciplined or lost his job over this? I mean, I'm of the belief that if you're going to allow a book to be part of the curriculum, then a teacher should be able to read it and students should be able to read it in full and should be able to read every single word in it. And especially as that young kid pointed out in the reporting, even a kid gets this. He wasn't saying it to anybody. He wasn't saying it in a derogatory way directed at someone. He was reading it from a classic novel. So if the school is okay with that book being part of a curriculum, how can they not be okay with a teacher reading the book? That doesn't make any sense. And I really think this teacher has the grounds for a lawsuit, especially if, as he said, there is no requirement to censor or skip over problematic words or language or themes in books. And I'll also say that we have on this show talked about sexually explicit books that have been taught to children. How many stories have we done on elementary school teachers in Washington State reading sexually explicit books about, you know, about same-sex relationships, you know, radical gender ideology to children as young as fourth grade, which is far more concerning than reading a quote from a novel to high schoolers? And it's unfortunate because it almost feels like this teacher was sort of set up by his students. You know, because they were apparently asking him, like, oh, are you going to read that line? Are you going to read those lines out loud? And then you saw you had a student who recorded it and put it out there. And kids are going to do that. That's fine. I mean, a teacher these days should expect that anything they say or do in class could be recorded and could be put out. And I'm sure that he did know that that was a possibility. But you can't, I don't understand. How can you let teachers read sexually explicit, really grotesque? I mean, some of the stuff that we've talked about in these books beyond radical gender and sexuality being pushed on kids as young as fourth grade, and that's celebrated by our public school system. But this guy loses his job? Absolutely unbelievable. So I don't think that that's going to be the end of this story. It's gotten quite a bit of national attention. All right, coming up next, Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell says he has a plan to deal with Seattle's housing crisis. What do you want to bet his plan sucks? Yeah, we'll talk about it first. Thanks for laughing at my jokes, Nicole. You know, I'm sure you guys laugh at me too, but I just can't hear you. I've talked so much for 2.5 years now about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program, and I am nearing my ultimate goal weight. And I continue to have a lot of success just sticking to what I learned on the program when I was on it actively for the first 60 days. I lost 30 pounds in the first 60 days, lost about 13 pounds over the next year, let that kind of sit on my body a little bit and sort of get used to it, and then decided, you know what, I want to keep going. I want to get down to my fighting weight, my TV weight from my 20s. And I am so close. I haven't weighed myself in couple days, but I imagine I'm only a pound or two away, and it feels great, and it gives me a lot of confidence, more energy, and just every facet of life, I swear to God, improves when you're not feeling just not. It's not just about how you look, but I think you guys know if you've struggled with your weight, it's also about how you feel. So look, not every weight loss program is right for every person. What worked for me might not work for you, but the only way you're going to find out is by scheduling a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Okay, Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell says he has a plan. This is from the Seattle Times. Harrell's plan to speed up housing construction in Seattle, which is, it's so funny to me because you heard this from Bob Ferguson too, right? He came in and one of his promises he made is he was going to cut the red tape, going to go in there and, oh, wow, there's just too much bureaucracy involved in building. So we're going to slash the red tape. We're going to reduce permit wait times, etc. And that's all great, but it's like totally a conservative idea, right? Limit the scope of government, don't have all this red tape that people have to navigate to produce a societal good. Building housing, building apartments, this is a societal good. And for so long, Democrats in Washington state have made those societal goods very difficult to accomplish. And you get into these long wait times for permitting. And every, I think it's with home construction, it's like adds $10,000 every couple weeks to the ultimate cost of buying a home. Every week, every month, they have to wait for all their permitting to come through. So Bob Ferguson came through and he said, we're going to do that. And that was celebrated by builders. And now that's Mayor Harrell's idea, too, to speed up housing construction in Seattle, is they're going to cut the red tape. They're going to make it easier and quicker to be able to build a new home, to be able to build a new apartment complex. Great idea, except you also just passed statewide rent control. So you just passed a policy that has absolutely scared builders out of the state of Washington and developers. And now you're saying, oh, but wait, come back. We'll do what we should have done 20 years ago and we'll cut the red tape and the bureaucracy. Now will you build here? They're probably still not going to want to, given everything else that's at play. Our friend Sean Flynn with the Rental Housing Association of Washington joins us to discuss. Sean Flynn, welcome back to Undivided.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so first, let me just, we have a story about Seattle housing, but rent control took effect May 7th, which is kind of interesting. It's that fast, because doesn't the state have to put some sort of infrastructure in place for enforcement, or not really?
Well, I mean, in theory, sure. That wasn't the, I'll tell you, the state's enforcement mechanisms, I'm less worried about than I am about my members being able to comply.
Right.
The governor, in his infinite wisdom, chose not to strike the emergency clause in the bill, which made the effective date of the ordinance the signing date of the ordinance, which was May 7th, which created all sorts of problems because A, Commerce wasn't directed to issue the CPI number, which set how much you can raise your rent to, until June. So that was a problem. So that we had a whole period of time when no one knew what the rent increase could be because it was unknowable. Beyond that, we had time space continuum problems that we now had notices that were issued before May, mm-hmm. that took effect after May, didn't have the required magic language.
Rent increase notices.
Yeah, rent increase notices that were issued before May 7th that took effect after May 7th didn't have the magic language because the magic language didn't exist at the point in time when the notices were lawfully issued. So it was a real It's been rough. It's been very confusing. And it is unfortunate that the government did not give us more runway to help everyone comply.
Yeah. And when you say CPI, because the version passed was you can, they cap the rent increases per year at 7% plus CPI up to 10%, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
And so, but we've got those numbers now. Commerce did their job, and yay, Commerce. We're very happy that they did so. And we know what the numbers are for this year and next year. So that's good.
What is it? What is the cap going to be?
The cap currently is at 10%.
Gotcha. Well, so you know.
The CPI number was more than 3%. So we are now capped at 10% because it's 7 plus the CPI number issued by Commerce.
Wait a second. So right out of the gate, they allow for this to adjust for inflation, but they cap it. But the inflation was over that.
Right.
Oh, my
so
God.
So you get some inflation, but not all the inflation.
Wow. Insane. And just goes to show why this is a stupid policy to begin with. This article in the Seattle Times today, Bruce Harrell's plan to speed up housing construction in Seattle. So he's got this plan and he says he wants to streamline the bureaucracy because builders are saying, look, it's taking too long in the permitting process. If we need more housing, you need to truncate that for us, which I imagine you think is a good thing. But does it even offset? We already heard from builders and developers that if you pass rent control, we're not going to come here. It's not going to be advantageous for us. So does speeding it up in Seattle offset the negative aspect of now the state's housing policies?
No.
Okay. Well, there it is.
Absolutely.
No, absolutely not, right?
This is, imagine you had another business. Pretend it wasn't housing, because we all get very emotional about housing in the state of Washington. Imagine we had another business. Let's say we had a business making software, right? And the government said, you won't be able to make any money selling software. But don't worry, we're going to make it really easy to start a software company. It doesn't matter. If you don't allow folks to make a reasonable rate of return on their investment, they're not going to invest in your city, regardless of whether you make it easy to do so. And while I applaud the city and Bruce Harrell's attempt to make streamline the process, that needs to get done. But this in no way does it mitigate the damage that rent control has done to the industry.
Yeah, they're totally missing the point. And you make that's a great comparison. It's like you can't make any money doing this, but we'll make sure that you can do it really quickly. Okay, so I can find out really quickly that I'm not going to make any money.
I want to lose money as fast as I can.
And then move on to the next project so I can lose more.
Lose more money. Yeah. So while it's great, like I like the idea, we want to streamline the process because we clearly need more building. Unfortunately, this is not the rent control is so cataclysmic to the market and it changes the math of the market so dramatically that these things that are sort of nibbling around the edges to try to make it better in no way counterbalance the weight of the damage done by rent control. So, you know, we had lot splitting bill passed. We had some other minor bills that passed the session that were positive for they're good bills in terms of housing production. But it is difficult to understate the damage that rent control does to a housing market. Even the discussion of rent control was damaging.
Well, right, because they're looking ahead. You're trying to plan projects ahead. So now if when rent control is on the table, it's like, well, I'm not even going to consider it now. We'll look at projects elsewhere because we don't know what's going to happen in Washington. When do you think, Sean, so you represent, you know, landlords, small to mid-sized housing providers. What was the immediate, I think, impact in the marketplace among that population of people? And how long do you think it'll be before we truly understand the full consequence of rent control?
Well, I think it depends. For large units in terms of production, right? So guys who are building 100 unit buildings, 50 unit buildings, right? We've already seen impact on that. Our permit, the number of permits that are being pulled has dropped off a cliff.
Wow.
So you're going to see less and my prediction is that we'll see less and less of those buildings going up in the future. For my smaller guys, we move much more quickly than, say, the larger guys. So if you've got a single family home that you're renting, say, in Ballard, it takes you know, once your lease is up, it takes 90 days to get that thing sold. You issue a 90-day notice of sell, and that thing will sell in a heartbeat, and that unit leaves the rental market forever.
Yeah.
Because it'll be bought by an owner-occupied person. And if you look at the way the Seattle market and specifically reacted to all the damage during COVID in terms of rent moratoriums and all that, you know, Seattle's own RIO numbers showed that we lost 14% of the stock of our single family homes in the rental market as soon as we were able to get them off the
market.
What's
RIO?
It's a rental registration program. So yeah. The city collects all the data and they keep an idea of how many units we have at any given moment. So I think that what we will see is probably a quicker response from my membership than from the larger guys. Mm-hmm. But I think my members, what I'm hearing again and again from my members is that if they are going to sell, they will wait for the lease to finish up and then they'll issue the notice and that unit will be gone.
Yeah. So we'd be looking at, you know, some of that being able to happen as early as like fall, if you're in the middle of something. So you got that 90-day, 3-month. What we would love from you guys, Sean, if you guys can dig it up for us, because we can talk about it on a future segment. You'd mentioned the permits that are being pulled has dropped off a cliff. I would love to be able to show people and visualize like that actually happening. And then the number of rental units as that sort of goes down. I know you guys probably are tracking that closely. So we'd love that because I think it'll illustrate exactly the impact of rent control. So wild stuff. Good idea, Bruce. Won't do anything. Sean Flynn, we appreciate it. They don't understand what rent control is going to do. I give it 6 months, and I don't think they will back away from it. Even if they see all that going off a cliff, the housing crisis get worse, they'll blame Donald Trump. I mean, that's the first thing, right? They'll find a way to do that. And I don't know. He took money from us or something. And then they'll come up with all these solutions that won't do anything. And then what will happen? Oh, well, that's why our housing crisis is so bad or our homeless crisis is so bad because the housing, they clowns. I don't even know what to say about it anymore. I mean, now you think all these years later, speeding up permitting is going to help the situation? Absolutely absurd. So I want to get that data from RHA about where the permitting goes and the number of rental units goes, because that is going to illustrate better than anything the consequence of these actions. So we just got some breaking video in. I'm going to play for you in a moment of a United States senator being arrested, put on the floor, arrested, put in cuffs because he tried to disrupt a press conference of Kristi Noem. So we'll have that video coming up next. First, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. I have encouraged all of you to take the First Mark Challenge. Why? Well, you can save an awful lot of money by doing it. And also you can understand whether your insurance is what you need or maybe you're paying for stuff that you don't even need. I think we've heard from so many viewers and fans of the show who've had fantastic results just by taking that challenge, making the phone call. Either they're saving thousands of dollars a year or they found out that the insurance they had was great and they didn't need to change anything. So they ended that process with a little bit of peace of mind. Our friend Brock Heward, former UW quarterback and sports radio host, says having First Mark on his side has been essential.
The word that comes to my mind is a word I use a lot on my sports show, and that is connective tissue. It's important in team building. It's important as players in a locker room to be connected to others. And when it comes to insurance, it's so complicated. It's so stressful. You just don't even want to deal with it. And that is where the connective tissue of having a pro, having a broker, having a partner, and most of all, having a teammate like First Mark Insurance, it was the best connective tissue we could find.
Yeah, so schedule the time to take the First Mark Challenge today. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They're always going to have your best interest in mind. All right, so let's get to this breaking video. So to set it up, DHS Secretary Kristi Noem is having a press conference. In barges United States Senator Alex Padilla, a Democrat, who wants to ask her questions about their immigration enforcement efforts. I think this is like video from two angles. So let's just roll it.
Sir, hands up. I'm Senator Alex Padilla. I have questions for the secretary. Because the fact of the matter is a half a dozen violent criminals that you're rotating on your...
Now he's out of the room. Kristi Noem's continuing to talk in the background.
On the ground. Hands upon your back.
If you let me see my hands, go ahead. Right, behind right, my right, back.
He's,
Cool. Okay, one hand. Lay flat. Lay flat.
Other hand, sir.
Other hand.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't going to help the situation. Look, what I know about it is basically what you saw there, that he barged into the press conference and he tried to interrupt it. If anybody else did that, the FBI would have arrested them, too. So just because he's a United States senator, I don't think he should get special treatment. He's also clearly resisting them at every step. I also think he wants to get arrested. I think you're going to see a lot of these stunts from Democrats who want to get arrested. Now, I do believe that if he has questions for the Department of Homeland Security as a United States senator, he should be able to get those questions answered. I don't know the extent to which he has tried through formal channels to reach out to Kristi Noem. He's the senior senator from California and certainly, you know, disagrees with a lot of what the federal government is doing. I do believe there's a proper oversight role to be played by the Senate in what's happening. Do I believe that oversight role is barging into a press conference and trying to scream at the DHS secretary? No, I don't. So knowing what I know now, I think he probably wanted the publicity of it. I don't know why else he would do it that way. But of course, he's just getting lauded by the Democrats. Senator Cory Booker put out a statement a moment ago. Senator Alex Padilla was fulfilling his congressional oversight duties. How did I know that's what they were going to say? When he was thrown to the ground and handcuffed, this is no isolated instance. This is a pattern of behavior by the Trump administration. There is simply no justification for this abuse of authority. So that's not your congressional oversight duty. Now, like I said, you do have one, but what does that look like? And is it an abuse of authority? What did you want them to do, I guess? Should he have just been allowed to interrupt and be in there? And I don't know what happened right before that video. So I don't know if he walked in calmly and tried to ask a question. I don't know. What I know is the video that we saw. Kamala Harris, United States Senator Alex Padilla, was representing the millions of Californians who are demanding answers to this administration's actions in Southern California. This is shameful and stunning abuse of power. Look, I don't know. I think it's attention seeking. That's my opinion. If I see something before that video that makes me feel otherwise, I will tell you and I will correct the record. But yeah, I think a lot of grandstanding. All right. I did toss that subscriber poll up on Patreon, Locals, and X. The question that I asked you guys, feel free to also take it after the show if you're watching live. Should the teacher have faced discipline in the Spokane case when he read To Kill a Mockingbird to his class, including passages that contained the N-word? So I asked, the answers I gave you to choose from are yes, or yes, but not lose his job, so some other form of discipline or whatever, or no, he shouldn't have faced any discipline at all. Nicole, what do you say?
I'm going to say no, based on these circumstances. Had he, you know, used it in a derogatory way or off the cuff or whatever, but quite obviously it was a situation where the kids were saying, is this important to the lesson? And he was saying yes, and then did it. And I think that we just all need to look at these things with common sense and right. Say, oh, did he mean that in a derogatory, terrible way? Obviously not. He was trying to teach them about this book. Yeah. And then I also think that they could have a conversation and say, okay, well, that didn't work because of cell phones in the classrooms and whatever else. So what should we do next time? But yes. No discipline.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that assessment. We're just not living. I mean, if you can read smut to kids about like sex and then
I mean, you're literally celebrating who people want to have sex with.
Right. Then you should be able to do this. I think it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Most people, 94% right now saying no. 6% saying yes, but not lose his job. Carenza said just what you said, Nicole. She said, I think it would be worthy of a conversation, but it wasn't a good idea. But the response seems a little bit too harsh. This is interesting. Papa Woody, where is the teachers union on this? Wow. I wonder if the teachers union will come to this teacher's. God, that's a good question. Will the teachers union come to this teacher's defense?
Well, I don't think they have.
Gee, I don't think they will.
He's only had a few years under his belt there. And so they just kind of said, oh, we're just not renewing your contract.
Yep. That's according to him. That's what he told Cho. We're not renewing your contract. So it's not a firing.
Well, you've seen the document. There's a document saying we don't think you're a good influence on the kids or something. But it's also interesting because I've looked at his social media a little bit and it looks like he leans conservative. So it's probably just their way of getting him out.
I doubt the teachers union's gonna stick up for that. Shakespeare is offensive and we still had to go through it to graduate. Time frame and context. If you cannot understand the past, you just repeat it, and censoring it is just ignorant. Let me see. Angela Kim, the use of the word in the context of a historical book is not deserving of discipline. It is important that the students understand the context and the use of that word. And again, if you don't think they should have any lessons on the context and the historical significance of that word, then don't have, then ban the book. Then liberals can ban that book if they don't want that book in classrooms. It's just absolutely insane. Trippy Hippie, I love that name, mm-hmm. Trippy Hippie. To Kill a Mockingbird is an American classic. It is included in nearly every curriculum. The use of controversial language is a poignant takeaway in 19th and 20th century literature. Jack says, dude, it's 2025 and you're in Washington State. What did you expect to happen when you were reading this? Dumb teacher.
Yeah, there is an element of that.
There is an element of that. I am, but it sounded like his lesson was sort of trying to push the boundaries on that kind of conversation of speech. So I don't know, but I am sure that teacher did not expect to lose his job over it. That seems a little bit extreme. Also just shows you, though, Spokane, it's in Eastern Washington, but it is much more like Seattle than the rest of Eastern Washington. So there's a little bit of a difference there. All right. Keep those comments coming in. I'll continue to read them. All right. We do have a closing sanity check. That's fabulous from Donald Trump. But to get in some comments from you guys from the live stream, Sergeant Pickles lived in my home for 6 years peacefully until recently when we called the cops on two different people who threatened us. It's going downhill fast. Interesting. I wonder what that comments is in response to, just the crime climate in Washington State or what? Cynthia Martin, I wish we had sheriffs like that in Washington. I freaking love this sheriff in Florida. There's a couple good sheriffs in Florida that we've played some great clips from on Florida Report. I mean, that was hilarious. That was like a 2.5 minute clip. Mm-hmm. He was just going on and on. If you do this, you do this. If right. you do this, it was so funny. I loved it.
It was great. Can you imagine? I mean, we have sheriffs that want to do that. I know we have sheriffs that want to do that.
Yep.
There's one sheriff that does do that, but he just doesn't get a lot of coverage. The Pierce County sheriff.
Oh, I don't know if he goes that hard, but yeah, he's more.
Have you seen his social media? He just doesn't get a camera pointed at him very often.
Yeah, or doesn't do it enough. Yeah, press conference like that. Old Sub Sailor, blue people messing up cities. They should just blank in their own living room. Silly Marxists. I don't know. What do you want them to do in their own living room? It just has a blank.
S.
Oh, okay.
Like, it up, in other words. I also think I saw that car that got set on fire.
Oh, my gosh.
Or got messed up. Not set on fire, but like.
We're sitting there, and I see this. So the line of riders comes up to the police, and they start making this makeshift barricade. But they had help because somebody left their PT Cruiser parked on the street by the federal building.
Why in the world?
So the PT Cruiser became part of the rioters' barricade, and they just added stuff to it. And I took a picture. I'm like, hey, if you left your PT Cruiser on 3rd and Marion, you might want to go get that, because that was a bad idea.
Did it get ruined? Did they?
You know, I actually took a video afterwards around it, and it looked like, for the most part, they didn't destroy it. They didn't spray paint it. They didn't
it must have been one of theirs.
Well, no, because it was during a time where police were right there. So I don't think that they would have started jumping on it and bashing it with the police line right there. They used it as a barricade. So it might have some damage, but it wasn't like overwhelming, that person got very lucky. They had some sort of sticker, though. I'm trying to remember what it was. It was a sticker that definitely indicated to me that it was a liberal.
Right.
So like, I was like, okay, I don't feel so bad for you. Tammy Chambers, they should have immediately told the car's owners to move their cars. If they didn't, the bus should have been used to move them. Talking about what happened in Spokane. The first sign of the violence building, it should have been shut down and arrests made. Yeah. And again, you have the right to protest, but you don't have the right to block movements. You don't have the right to block ICE agents. You don't have the right to block their transportation of prisoners. You don't have a right to take to the streets and block the streets with benches and stolen bikes and all of that stuff, which is, by the way, theft of service. You know, the rioters down at the federal building, they were telling me we're not ruining these Lime bikes and these scooters. They can be used again. And it's like, okay, but you're going to use them as barricades for 4 days. So the company nobody can use them. So the company can't make any money. That's theft of service. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Let me see. John, I went through a period where I thought being loud and violent would make those in authority bend to my will. It ended about the time I started kindergarten. Yeah. Yep. For most of us, the temper tantrums ended at a very young age. Salty Dog, it's all designed to destroy democracy and usher in communism. More and more, I tend to agree. Angie Holm, I think the media needs a vocabulary lesson on what the word peaceful means. Yeah, that's a pretty stunning thing. And this is what I used to tell younger like line producers when I was working in TV news. The advice I would give them is, when in doubt of what to call them, describe their actions. So if you don't know whether you should call them protesters or demonstrators or rioters or marchers, describe their actions. What are they doing? And that's the quickest way or the easiest way to not get something wrong. Like they're vandalizing X, they're assaulting police officers, you know, or they're marching through the streets or they're blocking traffic. So if you describe their action, that's the best way not to end up in a situation where you call violent people peaceful. So that's my best advice for newsrooms if they care to get things right.
I struggle because I want to give them the benefit of the doubt and just be, and just say it's kind of like not an ignorance, but like a something
small time TV station,
you know, just young. Oops, I didn't mean to call them peaceful. We were calling them peaceful earlier and oops.
Yeah.
But then it just seems very, I mean, they don't fix it when they're called out. Right. So it seems very intentional because it doesn't get fixed.
And they haven't issued a retraction on it. And what our policy
just
was always
the freaking tweet.
Well, you can't anymore, but at least put, hey, you know, this was wrong. Our policy for giving corrections was always you give a correction in the same method you made the mistake so people see it. So, right. For instance, if they get on TV and say, well, we regret saying it was peaceful, well, then the people on X don't see it. So what they need to do is in that post, they need to make the correction there so people see that they actually realize they made a mistake, or delete the thing and then send out a new tweet saying, hey, we got this wrong. We've deleted it. Mm-hmm. Jamie, any of us who live in Spokane know Krem2 is the most biased left-leaning news station around. But it's just insane. How dumb do they think people are? You were just for the last 6 hours sending out posts about things being violent and vandalism and arrests, and now you say it was peaceful. So somebody's not talking. The one left biased lefty wasn't talking to the other person and saying, hey, I'm going to call it peaceful. So stop posting videos of all the arrests and stuff. Mike Bolton. So all this hate speech crap, in my opinion, is unconstitutional. Sure, it may get you punched in the face, but saying stuff shouldn't be illegal. I think that's in reference to the teacher. So I don't know that hate speech is illegal, is it? It's a hate crime. See, I think there has to be a crime combined with it, because you can say like vile
That's
things.
Free speech,
I believe that can't that they don't get you arrested. You can't make a threat. So you can't say something, blah, 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 I'm going to kill you. You know, so in that sense, that would probably be a hate crime, because it would be a crime associated with your bias towards a particular group of people. Mm-hmm. But in this case, talking about a teacher reading from a book, I mean, that's not. Now, if that teacher called a kid in the class who was black the N-word, they should lose their job. That's a much different situation, and that would be quote-unquote hate speech, and there'd be a consequence for that speech for an employer. But that's what they're acting like happened, that he called some kid the N-word. I mean, he didn't, obviously. So,
again, it's the kids set him up for that. That was ridiculous. Recording it, asking him a question so that he had to say it, or so they were ready to record.
Yeah.
It was just ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely insane. All right, Nicole, thank you so much. Good shows this week. With that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right. So President Donald Trump and the First Lady, along with the Vice President and the Second Lady. Is this the Second Lady?
Yeah, I
think so. They attended a performance of Les Mis at the Kennedy Center last night. It was a very star-studded event, if you're talking about conservative politicians. But there are some celebrities and some actors who would not come because Donald Trump was going to be there. So that was their form of protest. Donald Trump was asked on the red carpet to respond to that, and his answer showed why he's such a boss.
It's been reported that some actors may be boycotting tonight.
I couldn't care less, honestly. All I do is run the country well. The economic numbers, you saw them today, they're setting records. We took $88 billion in tariffs in 2 months, far beyond what anybody expected. There's no inflation. People are happy. People are wealthy. The country is getting back to strength again. That's what I care about. And we're going to have a safe country. We're not going to have what would have happened in Los Angeles. Remember, if I wasn't there, if I didn't act quickly on that, Los Angeles would be burning to the ground right now.
Thank you. The celebrities don't like you. I couldn't care any less. I'm doing actual important things. That has been your reality check, sanity check for today, but also a reality check. Maybe I should call it reality check. A reminder, so 6 a.m. tomorrow is when our 30% off promo ends. I don't know how many it is right now, but it's like maybe even in single digits by now of the number we need to reach our goal of adding 300 paid subscribers. So if you've been holding out, just thinking, help support our work. I think we're doing, I like to think we're doing important work that is desperately needed in Washington State, and we need you to be able to do it full time. So you can sign up, patreon.com/undivided, patreon.com/undivided. Use the promo code 300. That's the number 300. For the rest of you, we'll have a great episode of Sundays with Subscribers coming up on Sunday. We're going to have an independent journalist who's been on the ground all week in California talk about his experience covering the riots, what really happened, what the media got wrong, what the media got right, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, there's going to be a protest on Saturday. We don't really know what's going to come of that across the country. So I guess we'll hold our breath. So I'll see you then. For the rest of you, see you back on the live show Monday at noon.